live from the Star Rental Sports Desk, your 950 KJR Sports Headlines.
Yeah, buddy, here we go. How about this? Softy and Dick, without Dick filling in for Ian Furness. Headlines are brought to you and you only by our friends at VenueKings.com.
That's all we got. One damn hit.
Okay. You need tickets for the Kraken, Climate Pledge Arena, concerts, whatever, Husky basketball, baseball in the spring when they get their act together. VenueKings.com can get you in. Be sure and use code SOFTY at checkout for a little discount. Not a big one, but a little one. All right, you're nice to me. Maybe it'll be a big one. Hey, big news in college football in the Pac-12. Arizona State quarterback Jaden Daniels apparently has had enough for Herm Edwards. He's out. Entering the transfer portal. More news in college football. Jim Harbaugh went from almost getting fired a year ago to taking the Vikings job like a month ago, and now he has a brand-new contract at Michigan. 5-year deal for old Jimmy Harbaugh. Averages between $7 and $7.6 million a year over the life of the deal. We got not one, but two big games tonight for you coming up on KJR. Kraken at Winnipeg at 4:30. Faceoff at 5 o'clock with the Washington State Sportscaster of the Year, Ian Furness, on the call. And then following that, UW-USC, Jason Castricone and Tony Hamilton. Just making sure you're paying attention.
What?
Pre-game 8 o'clock, tip-off 8:30 at USC, also right here on 950 KJR.
And here we go.
It's time for the Ian Furness Show.
You want me to turn it up?
Send your text to 49451 on Seattle Sports Radio 950 KJR.
All right, here we go. It's my pleasure to be here sitting in for the Washington State Sportscaster of the Year. Not even going to try. Won't even try and live up to the standards set by him because he's a professional and I am not. So let's have some fun.
Let's do it.
I mean, you kind of wake up or get to a game and you realize by the fourth quarter you're down by 30, or maybe by the time the game kicks off that you've already lost a playoff spot because somebody else has already clinched the final seed and you're just looking for draft coverage now. We can just goof around and have some fun, man. I mean, heck, if we burn this whole thing down between now and 3 o'clock, it's not on our resume. It's on Ian Furness's resume, so the hell with it. So Ian Furness is in Winnipeg, about to call the Kraken and Winnipeg at 5 o'clock tonight, pregame 4:30, coming up on KJR. You know what's going on tonight, right? John Forslund is doing a national game, so our old buddy Everett Fitzhugh, not Everett Fitzme, Everett Fitzhugh, is going to be bumped over to TV. That means him and JT Brown will become the first ever African-American combo to call a game on television in the NHL. That's pretty cool. So congrats to Everett and JT for pulling that accomplishment off. But that means that Ian Furness has to jump on a plane and fly to the middle of freaking nowhere and call the Kraken in Winnipeg on radio tonight at 5 o'clock. So we got the Kraken at 5 o'clock. We got UW and USC with Tony and Jason pregame at 8. Tip off at 8:30 from, is it still the Galen Center down there, or has that name been changed? I know that Petros isn't calling the PA anymore. Did you know about that?
Did he?
He was the play-by-play, or excuse me, the PA announcer, I believe, for USC women's basketball. Huh. And he would go on the air on his show and, like, criticize Pat Hayden and the entire USC department.
Oh,
so
no.
They fired him. I mean, how do you get fired from a freaking PA job, for God's sakes? Either A, by dropping an F-bomb, or B, ripping the people that give you a paycheck. And that's what he did.
Or C, because he's too ugly to be on that wall.
He is way too ugly to be on that wall. There is no question about that.
He's too ugly to be on that wall.
You should have told me. I would have had that ready.
Sorry.
All right, so Kevin Shockey tells us, and I love when the assistant program director of the week, Kevin Shockey, has us fill in for guys like Ian Furness because we don't know anything going on.
No.
And, you know, 5-6 minutes before we go on the air, he says, oh, by the way, you guys have a giveaway you have to do because Dave Tomlinson is coming on the air at 2 o'clock to talk Kraken from Winnipeg. And, the Beardsley Public House, John Howie's restaurant in Bothell, which I've been to many, many times.
So good.
Right off of 405. You're heading north on 405. It's right off the exit there on the west side of 405. Great little spot. I had never been in there up until about 3 or 4 years ago. And then when I went in, I was like, wow, this place is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Which is no surprise because John Howie is the freaking man. So we give away a gift card. And I don't have any idea what the hell this is. I'll just read this email. Kevin says, every Thursday, we do a giveaway associated with the Dave Tomlinson segment. Okay, fine. That makes sense. At 1 o'clock, you'll play this highlight in its entirety right here.
Giordano on the far boards. Ahead, he's got Riley Sheahan. Sheahan saucers toward the net. Jordan Eberle, he scores! No goals in 22 games. And he has just given the Kraken a 4-3 lead with 1:42 left in regulation.
Jordan Eberle Kraken All-Star.
Okay, then it says we replay at the very end where Dave says Jordan Eberle Kraken All-Star.
Jordan Eberle Kraken All-Star.
All right, I'm tracking you so far. We're on the same page. Good. Then we let listeners know that we'll have Dave on at 2 o'clock to talk Kraken, and we'll ask for them to text in that line right there.
Jordan Eberle Kraken All-Star.
To 49451. One random listener who texts in that line while he's on will win $50 to Beardsley Public House. John Howie's restaurant in Bothell. They sponsor Dave's weekly segment with Ian. Jackson will then send me the name and the address of the winner. That's the whole thing. Let me know if it's unclear. Thanks, Kevin Shockey. So am I supposed to go on the air at 2 o'clock and remind people to text in the line that you heard in the first segment?
Yes.
Or do I just leave it alone?
I know you do have to remind people to text in, but we will not play.
Right. Jordan Eberle Kraken All-Star.
We'll play that again.
Right, because if you're not listening at 1 o'clock to get that line, then screw them.
Screw them.
The hell with them, right? I mean, that's the the reward. I mean, if we're going to ask you to sit here and listen to that and then wait an hour to take advantage of it, it would be cheating if we gave that clip away to somebody else at 2 o'clock. So that's it. We're not doing it again. You've heard it twice. That's it. All right, you got it. 2 o'clock. We'll remind you to text in that line to 49451, and we'll draw somebody out there going to win $50 to Beardsley Public House, John Howie's restaurant up there in Bothell. So Aaron Torres is going to join us. My old buddy, he used to work for Fox Sports Radio. I think they ran him out of town as well, and now he's doing his own little podcast thing. So Aaron will come on at 1:30. We can talk about all the times he likes to remind people he's right about stuff on his Twitter account. And then Dave coming up at 2 o'clock, and then we get to hang out and do our show, at least for 90 minutes today, before Kraken pregame. William Inge is the new defensive coordinator at UW. He's going to join us at 3 o'clock. Mike Holmgren at 3:45. And then Mike will be joined by one of his former linebackers, a guy who was, I think he was a rookie in 2005 when Mike went to the Super Bowl against Pittsburgh. Lofa Tatupu will be with us about 4:05 before pregame with the Kraken. So in typical softy fashion, I tossed out a poll on Twitter today.
Update on the poll.
And I want to give you an update on that poll if I can. At Softy KJR. So this was kind of motivated by this story that came out today. Chelsea Janes, you can follow her on Twitter, at Chelsea_Janes, because apparently at Chelsea Janes was already spoken for by somebody. She's a national baseball reporter for the Washington Post and does a great job covering baseball. So she threw a little report out about the negotiations between the players and the owners today, and she wrote this morning, it appears that most of the MLB negotiation squad has left the negotiations after 15 minutes. Now, that could mean anything, right? Maybe somebody had to go pick up their wife. Maybe somebody had an emergency, had to get home. Maybe somebody got gas and had to hit the can. Who knows what the hell was going on? It could be anything. But I think the problem with reports like this is that people are already coming from a position of massive skepticism when it comes to Major League Baseball and the players figuring this out. Look, I don't know, in my opinion, if I agree that baseball is a dying sport, because once you're dying, I don't know of any way to turn that around.
Right.
Right? I mean, if you're a dying sport, if you're a dying entity, then that tells me at some point baseball is going to actually be dead.
So is it sick or is it dying?
I don't know. I think it's sick in some ways, for sure. But some people also think it's dying, that baseball in its current form, with its current platform, with its current fan base, with its current broadcast deals, may not even exist in 25 to 30 years from now. I don't know if I can buy that, but I know there's a lot of people out there. I'm not naive enough to ignore the fact that there are a lot of people out there who do believe that baseball is a dying entity and is being replaced by hockey, it's being replaced by esports, it's being replaced by soccer.
Yep.
I believe you call it football.
That's correct.
Okay, whatever. So I don't believe that because I love the game. I think a big reason why people in this town have that opinion is because, simply put, the M's have sucked for 20 years. And that's it. I mean, you cannot tell me that's not a factor for a lot of people. If we had the same kind of track record in the last 20 years that, I don't know, the Yankees, Giants, Red Sox, whatever, Dodgers, be here all day. I don't know if we have that kind of opinion here. You think you flip on Petros's show in Southern California, or you flip on WFAN in New York City, and you got people calling in, baseball's dying. You don't hear that.
No.
But you hear it in Seattle because the team is terrible. So the question I threw out there, and look, I understand that people are annoyed by what's happening with baseball. So my response was, hey, man, rule of thumb in business is don't piss off your client base. Don't annoy your customers. And baseball right now, for sure, is annoying a large portion of its fan base. So I asked, is your interest in baseball waning?
Update on the poll.
And I gave you four options. 1,500 votes in the first couple of hours. It's on pace to be a record. I gave you four options. Yes by a lot. Yes by a little. No, love it the same. Or no, love it more. 5.3% actually said they love it more.
Huh.
Okay, maybe those are, I don't know, Dodger fans that are coming off a World Series title from a couple years ago. Maybe they're Padre fans that are fired up for the future down there. Maybe they're Red Sox fans. I have no idea. Yankee fans. But 5.5% said they love it more. 40% said they love it the same. 27.2 said their interest is waning by a lot, and 27.2 said their interest is waning at least by a little. That means 54%+ of respondents are saying that their interest in the game of baseball is waning. And I think this is an important thing for the owners and the players to see that, look, man, you live in a bubble. Maybe you don't listen to sports talk radio. Maybe you don't listen to your fans. Maybe you don't read the newspaper. Maybe you don't jump online on message boards or check Twitter or Facebook or InstaSnap, whatever the hell it's called, all that stuff. But you people have to know that there are folks out there that are losing interest in your product. And the thing that sucks for me as a Mariner fan, and Dick and I get into this argument all the time on the air, hey, man, for the first time in 20 years, there's some real enthusiasm. And maybe it's not the first time in 20. They've had 4 or 5 years where they've had, you know, 89, you know, 88 win right. seasons, but they've thrown out turds the following year, every single year since. But there is some enthusiasm for this baseball team, and maybe even more so now because of the minor league system, because of what people like Baseball America, MLB Pipeline, whatever, are saying about the prospects. It, you know, I don't remember the last time the M's had the number one ranked farm system by anybody in baseball. So there certainly is, I think, a little more juice to this train that people are jumping on now over the offseason, and lo and behold, there's a freaking work stoppage. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I mean, John Stanton has got to be pulling whatever white hairs he's got left out of his freaking head. And I don't know what John Stanton's take is on this whole thing, because apparently owners and general managers talking about this thing is like North Korea talking about their nuclear stash. Oh, we can't do that. No, we'll get in trouble. I mean, I'm talking to people inside the game that are like, hey, man, don't tell anybody you talk to me. This is secret stuff. I'll get my wrist slapped and it could be really bad. So the secrecy that they're dealing with, number one, I think is a problem. I think others have written about the lack of transparency in the process. That's a problem for a lot of people. But in the meantime, as they bicker back and forth about billions and hundreds of millions of dollars, guess what? They're going to open up the door to their house, walk outside the front yard, and there's going to be nobody there. They're going to be gone. There's going to be like tumbleweeds flying down the street, you know, newspapers from 10 years ago sitting there that nobody picked up. Everybody's going to move out.
Right.
Right? It's like a nuclear accident and the air is not safe to breathe and we all took off and left. Meantime, you idiots had no idea because you're stuck in your freaking bunker and you got no clue what's happening out there in the world. So I'm concerned that every little opportunity baseball takes to annoy their fan base, they're chipping away at the rock. And they're going to wake up one day, and there's going to be nothing left. And that makes me sad, and it scares the hell out of me.
I agree. And the funniest part about this whole thing is that baseball is angering every dimension of baseball fan. And this goes back the last few years or so, because you look at a guy like Chuck Powell, right? You know, our morning show host, the baseball nerd. Chuck,
never heard
Chuck
of him.
Powell.
Oh, Charles
and,
Powell.
And,
okay,
and,
gotcha.
I right. mean, and he has said a number of times that Rob Manfred hates baseball. Mm-hmm. So he is a diehard baseball fan who is angry because of the steps that baseball has taken. Then you look at me, right? Baseball for me is probably the third favorite sport, maybe even fourth favorite sport, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm a Mariner fan, but I'm not gigantic, right? It's angering me because they're not freaking coming to an agreement and coming together to actually start playing baseball and be in Arizona for spring training. Yeah. They are angering every level of the baseball fan. So there is nobody in this country who is right now happy with what's going on. And when you raise this level of frustration among the sports fans of the entire country around one sport, I don't know if you mentioned dying or sick. It's been sick for a while. Maybe it's actually dying now.
Maybe it is dying. Maybe it's not going to be around in the next 20 years. And I know, you know, we had this conversation yesterday with Dick on the air when Seth Everett was on with us. And quick shout out, Seth. You guys know Seth from his early days with KJR. Lost his dad a couple weeks ago. So condolences to him and his family for sure on that. But Seth came out yesterday and he basically talked about, you know, the lack of offense and the Mariners, and they had a terrible offense for a large majority of the year. There were no runs being scored by anybody. What does baseball do? What's their history? Baseball's history is to constantly adjust to score more runs, whether lowering the mound or making the ballpark smaller, or introducing elbow pads that hitters can wear so they feel more comfortable staying in the box, or the universal DH, or the DH itself in 1970. I mean, everything baseball's done in general terms when they make changes like that is being done to increase scoring, right? I mean, nobody's walking around saying, hey, we have to move those fences back. We got to move them back 500 feet. You know, I mean, they were too far out at Safeco when they opened the park, so they brought them in. Nobody's talking about lengthening the base paths and going from 90 feet to 150. Not the deal, right? Nobody's talking about making the foul area smaller than it already is. So everything baseball has done has been done to increase offense, and I think that you're going to see it done again. I mean, you're already seeing it.
They have to.
You're putting a runner on second base.
Yeah.
Right, these gimmicks to score more runs. So you know that when you have to fundamentally continue to change the game, I think that that reeks of desperation by baseball. And I'm not saying that all these moves were the wrong move. I like a lot of them. I like what Bud Selig did with the playoffs. I love expanding the postseason. I think it's still a huge novelty for baseball to have very few teams make the playoffs. And I think, honestly, the more towns that you can get excited about postseason baseball, the better off you are. So I like a lot of these moves. But they're doing it because people are losing interest. And they're doing it because they want to appeal to a younger audience and a younger fan base, and they want to stay relevant. So I just think a big problem for us in Seattle is the way the team's played, obviously. I also think, number two, guess what? People are pissed off at baseball. They're angry. They're screaming. They're yelling. They're taking to social media. You know why? Because it's fashionable. Because everybody's doing it. Right? I mean, you go online and you start reading comments, hashtag MLB. How many of them are complimentary? How many of them are positive? And people that don't even know baseball and don't even understand what the hell is going on with baseball are pissed off because everybody else is pissed off. Yeah. So I'm going to get pissed off too.
Right.
So baseball's got to figure this the F out, man, before they start losing a ton of fans. And I think the Mariners are in a position where John Stanton, honestly, should be almost leading the charge to get this thing figured out. John Stanton, wherever those meetings are, if they're being held on Zoom or Microsoft Teams or FaceTime or with a freaking can with a string on it, John Stanton should be leading the charge to get this thing done because he needs his product on the field yesterday.
Right.
He needs his team on the field today, okay? Not tomorrow, today. He needs to take advantage of whatever sliver of momentum he picked up a year ago and get the fans back and get this young team playing again and get people believing before he loses them forever. So if John Stanton's on vacation somewhere and he's not leading the charge to get this thing fixed between players and owners, then he's not doing the right thing. No. He's doing it wrong.
No, and you look at Seattle specifically. It's funny that poll. So we go over it again here. 54% total, right? Say the interest has
waned.
Now
it's 55%.
There you go. Yeah, so 55-45, right?
In some way, shape, or form. Right.
Exactly. And then that category that no, it hasn't changed at all. You said it was at 40%.
Yes.
Now, if we're to assume, and I know it's a slight assumption, that most of that audience is Seattle-centric.
Of course.
That 40% number, and I'm part of that 40%, interests me because I think that is because of the excitement for what is to come. So I think that we're going to have to take a look at these Seattle fans over the next month or so if this continues to be the case.
Yeah. Well, we'll find out, man, what's going on. We'll find out what's going on. What do you mean 3 more minutes? Oh, okay, gotcha. We can hang around then for
a
while.
We can hang around.
I just think in the end that this is something that this could be a seminal moment in some ways for baseball and a seminal moment for the franchise. So let's get it done. All right, here's what we're going to do. Aaron Torres is going to join us coming up in a few minutes from now. We'll get his thoughts on everything happening around college basketball. UW and USC at 8 o'clock tonight. Tip-off 8:30, pregame at 8 o'clock. And another interesting topic that we can hit on as well. You guys want to chime in at 49451, the text line. Maybe we'll get some thoughts on the text line, spit them out to you between now and 4:30. You know, Washington basketball to me is really an unbelievably unique thing right now, because Lorenzo Romar, when he was here, was a victim of his own expectations, meaning he would win, they would do great things, go to the Sweet 16, make the tournament, you know, win the Pac-10 championship and win the tournament, and then the expectations would rise and they would not live up to him and people would get mad. Now it's the exact opposite. Now Mike Hopkins has a couple of years where he throws out a terrible product on the court, and now all of a sudden UW basketball is fifth or sixth in the Pac-12, and people are acting like we just discovered the atom, for God's sakes, with this team. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
It's the exact opposite phenomenon of what happened to Lorenzo Romar. You know, John Wilner's on the air talking about what a great job Mike Hopkins is doing. Hey, they're so much better than we thought. Well, that's because you're comparing them to one of the worst teams in the country in the last couple of years. And their NCAA net rating is still not very good. They have no quad one wins. When they play a great team, they get their doors blown off. And they'll see two good teams this week, USC tonight and UCLA on Saturday. So I'm just saying this. If Mike Hopkins wants to be a guy that Husky basketball fans can support and get behind, he needs to give them a little Scooby snack. And that doesn't mean beating a bad Arizona State team. It doesn't mean winning 6 out of 8 against quad 3 and quad 4 teams. A Scooby snack is beating UCLA on Saturday.
Yep.
A Scooby snack is next time you play Oregon, beat them after getting thumped and down by 40 at halftime. A Scooby snack is when the Boogers come here in a week from now, next weekend, blow their doors off. They're not a very good basketball team either. So they need to get the fan base and give the fan base something tangible that they can sink their teeth into. So I'm looking forward to seeing what happens tonight and on Saturday against USC and UCLA. All right, can we break now? Okay, fine. Aaron Torres going to join us next on 950 KJR.
It's time for our weekly conversation with senior writer at FoxSports.com, Aaron Torres. Brought to you by your local steel dealer. If you want power and reliability, you want a steel. To find a dealer near you, visit SteelDealers.com. Now with Aaron Torres, here's Ian Furness.
That's not Ian Furness. I am not the Washington State Sportscaster of the Year. It's just Dave Sathymuller hanging out until 4:30, cracking pregame 4:30 from Winnipeg. Ian's on the call. We're going to talk to Dave Tomlinson, 2 o'clock. But joining us right now on the air, I love talking to Aaron Torres. We have not had a chance to talk to him a lot because despite the fact that, let's face it, I made this guy what he is in media, and then he dumped me for Ian about a year and a half ago. I love his Twitter account because you ever want to know what predictions he made that were correct, just check his Twitter. He'll tell you. On the internet. Here he is, our old pal Aaron Torres. How are you, man? What's going on?
Wow. I mean, a little aggressive. It's okay. I mean, you wonder why I broke up with you for Ian. I mean, You know, Ian treats me right here. He likes my great prediction.
Hey, listen, if you put me and my ex-wife in the same room, we'd have problems too. All right? I'll tell you that right now, pal. So it's a miracle that we can coexist.
Like it's a you thing. It seems like it's a you thing, not an us thing. You know, you're going after me here. It sounds like this is your situation with everybody.
You know, if I see you in public, it's going to be a definitely you thing for sure. So watch out, pal. I'm kidding. Aaron Torres is with us.
Going
it's great.
To the Final Four this year?
I don't know because it's in New Orleans, which I love to go to the Final Four when it's in New Orleans. I think the Final Four should be there every year, by the way, and the Super Bowl, but it depends on Westwood One. If they do a thing, then we'll probably go. So.
Okay, you let me know. I'm probably going to go too. I'm not official yet, though, so we'll talk.
They got COVID down there in New Orleans? Is that thing gone?
I mean, it's gone everywhere. I mean, okay, did you watch the Super Bowl? Yeah, I mean, there wasn't a mask in sight.
Good, then I'm in. I'm in if it's gone. I'm good to go. All right. Aaron Torres is with us. Hey, man, lots of stuff to go over. And first of all, I want to ask you about what's going on at Duke. I was watching that Duke-Wake Forest game the other night when Coach K had to leave the bench at halftime. And John Shire, who's the coach in waiting, for those that don't know, they've already announced that he's the guy. And you know there was a lot of people that were pissed off that wanted Tommy Amaker in Durham instead of John Shire. And they barely won that game against Wake Forest. How bad a situation would that have been if they had lost that game with the coach in waiting on the bench?
Well, yeah, it's interesting, Soft, because there's a new book out, I guess like an unauthorized biography of Coach K. It's not officially out yet, and that was one of the things that kind of came out of the book, was that there was a faction, including the school president, that wanted Tommy Amaker as the next head coach. And so right after that happened, I believe it was that day, as you said, Coach K had to leave the bench. Yeah. John Shire is kind of in first, second opportunity. I think he kind of filled in one game earlier this year, and they almost blew a massive lead. And so what I would say, man, is, listen, you and I have talked about this. I love college hoops. I understand that on the national scale, it doesn't resonate like it used to. But I bring it up because there is definitely a shifting guard, not only in college basketball, but in the ACC specifically. I mean, you know, North Carolina lost at home to Pitt last night. North Carolina's looking like an NIT team first year post Roy Williams. Not to say that Hubert Davis can't figure it out, but they do not look good so far. And obviously you just referenced John Shire as well. So it's an interesting couple years in college hoops. I mean, one thing Ian and I talk a lot about is just this ever-changing landscape with NIL, transfer rules, stuff like that. Yeah. But we're also seeing a changing guard with the coaching as well. And obviously in college basketball, Duke and North Carolina kind of had that.
You mentioned that you think interest in college basketball is not what it used to be. And it, I mean, in some ways it's not what it used to be for me, because my favorite team's not very good. And number two, I'm 48 and not 18 years old. I mean, the Michigan Wolverines in, you know, 89 came to town with Glenn Rice and Ramil Robinson and Terry Mills and Loy Vaught and Steve Fisher, and they stayed at a hotel like 5 minutes from my house, and my parents were both Michigan graduates, so I was a big fan of that team, but I was also an impressionable 16-year-old, so that's part of it. But why do you think college basketball is not resonating like it used to?
It's really funny. So I was actually in Tucson for the UCLA-Arizona game a few weeks ago, kind of sitting at a bar the night that Texas returned to play Texas Tech. And I was talking to a guy there, and, you know, you probably know the deal, Softy, but, you know, Chris Beard was at Texas Tech, alma mater, wants to go back to Texas, whatever. And so the crowd is crazy, all that stuff. And the guy said to me, he said, you know, it's just, I used to watch college hoops, but the guys, they don't stay as long, and I don't get to know them, and every year it's a new roster, every team. And so I think there's a lot of that with college hoops, but I'll say this, and it's probably an unpopular opinion, but one that I'm another one that I'm right on, by the way. You know, I think that the changing landscape of basketball, where these guys leave for the NBA younger and younger, less and less prepared, I think it not only is hurting college basketball, I think it's hurting the NBA right now, where you have these guys, and this isn't like, oh my God, don't pay guard, like, but you know, I think there's something to be said about what the NFL does, the fact that the NFL, you have to wait 3 years, you get to know a Kyler Murray, you get to know a Joe Burrow, you get to know a Trevor Lawrence before they enter the league. And in basketball, a Zion gets to Duke, and by the time anybody realizes who he is, he's out the door. Then he gets to the NBA, and that might be an extreme example, but, you know, think about all the guys that have come through college basketball that, you know, then they get to the NBA, then they're this, then they're that.
Yeah.
And I just think I think the transition from high school to the NBA is not only hurting college basketball, I think it's hurting the NBA as well. Guys are coming in younger. They're making money. A lot of them aren't reaching their potential. It's harder to get to know guys, all that good stuff. And listen, the ratings kind of reflect that. The NBA just isn't as watched as much as it used to be, a lot no different than college basketball. Now, everyone would say, well, you know, all the ratings are down. Well, they're not down for the NFL. They're not down for college football. They're not down for March Madness, whatever. So that's kind of my half-baked. I just think I get why, guys, if you're 19 and you can make $8 million a year or whatever pre-endorsements, you should do it.
Of course.
But I think it hurts. I think it hurts both levels of basketball. I really do.
Yeah, I don't blame the kids at all. I'm with you 1,000%. Aaron Torres with us, usually with Ian at this time every Thursday on 950 KJR. But today he's with me, as he should be. Let me ask you about Mike Hopkins for a second. We mentioned this in the first segment before you came on that, you know, Hopkins really is like the opposite of Romar, and that Romar was a victim of his own expectations. Hopkins is actually benefiting from what happened the last couple of years. They were so terrible that even being remotely decent, people think that, you know, it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. And, you know, we had John Wilner on a couple of days ago. He's with us every week. And we asked him, you know, can he tap the transfer portal every single year? Because he tapped it a year ago. The problem is he taps it a year ago and they're 128th in net. So what are we doing long term with Mike Hopkins in Seattle, man?
Well, you know, I mean, it's whatever it is, year five. And, I mean, there's a pretty direct correlation that, you know, he won his best with Lorenzo Romar's players. Then he tried the one-and-done thing with Isaiah Stewart and Jaden McDaniels. And I know that the tournament wasn't played that year. But when Washington finishes in 12th place in the Pac-12, I don't think they're making the NCAA tournament. And so I did have the thought, you know, probably a week or two ago when Washington was on a win streak. And I'll be honest, I watch more college basketball than most people, and it wasn't until I saw Dave Softy Mathers tweet about Washington at the time being on a 6-7-8 game winning streak, whatever it was, that was the only way that I knew that Washington was playing well, which is kind of a direct reflection of how far the program has fallen. And so I started to look into it a little bit, and I do think there's something to the fact that there's a lot of talent in Seattle. Right now, it's not staying at Washington, and you know, Mike Hopkins maybe isn't giving them a good reason to stay in Washington. But there's a lot of guys that they go someplace and it doesn't work out. And so you're seeing the ripple effects of that with Emmett Matthews bouncing back, with P.J. Fuller bouncing back, with Dejon Davis bouncing back, all that good stuff. So I don't know if this was a one-year outlier, but I do know that there's plenty of talent in the area. And I think there's a lot of schools that are going to benefit from this transfer stuff where guys leave an area and then come back. I think USC has a chance to do that in Southern California, San Diego State, things like that. Is it sustainable? I think in this era it might be sustainable. Is it sustainable for Mike Hopkins? That kind of remains to be seen because, as you said, man, it's been weird, right? It's been weird since that NCAA tournament run a few years ago. It's been all downhill since then.
By the way, did you just call me Dave Softy Mathers? Is that what you said? I am not related to the guy that played the Beaver, by the way. That's not me.
Mather.
Who the hell's Mather? Mahler.
Mather?
How long have I known you for, Torito? The hell's your last name again?
You're mauling me right now. You've been mauling me since I came on air.
You love it.
I can't get a word in edgewise.
You love it. You know what? It's about time somebody humbled you for crying out loud. Hey, man, hope to see you in New Orleans down the road. You're doing a great job. Appreciate it and love having you on with Ian every week.
You understand I have a wife to humble me. I don't need you doing it, too, okay? Right. I got enough of that in my life. But all right, we'll talk soon.
I appreciate you. See you, buddy. Aaron Torres with us on the radio program. I was like, did he just call me Mather? What the hell's going on here? My God. 1:39, we're going to break. Dave Tomlinson from the Kraken broadcast crew will join us at 2 o'clock. And then William Inge, the brand new defensive coordinator for UW, he'll join us at 3 o'clock. Coming up on a busy Thursday on 950 KJR.
Now back to Ian Furness on your home for the Washington Huskies and the Seattle Kraken. Sports Radio 950 KJR.
All right, Softy Jackson in for Ian and Kevin. Ian's out gallivanting around northern Canada, and Shockey's doing who knows what. Is he here today?
No, he's not even here.
Ah, well, good for him, man. Taking advantage of the opportunity. What the hell? That is a veteran guy right there, man. Cashing in on a chance to stay home with his wife and kid, and I don't blame the guy. We're hanging out until 4:30 today. Kraken pregame from Winnipeg, face off at 5 o'clock, and then we got basketball also following that, UWSC at 8 with a tip-off at 8:30, and then the Sounders have a CONCACAF game against Honduran side Matagua. Isn't that the name of the gremlin? Oh, that was Mogwai. Never mind. You ever see Gremlins, the movie Gremlins?
I did not.
I keep forgetting you're 7 years old.
Yes, that's
I'm
correct.
Sorry. Great film. You should check it out. Anyway, what time is that kickoff?
5:30 pre 6 o'clock kick.
Over on 1090.
Yes.
Right? So we got the whole thing. Are you doing the pregame tonight?
I am indeed.
All right. So you're going to get out of here, put your suit on, your funny hat, your fancy shoes, your tie, all that stuff.
No suit today.
Get on down there and do the pregame. So 5:30 pregame, 6 p.m. kickoff over on 1090. We got Kraken and Dogs on 950 KJR. I want to mention this real quick. because I feel like if we're going to sit here and fill in for the Washington State Sportscaster of the Year, we should be allowed to kind of, you know, get a little something for the effort.
Yeah.
So we are putting together on the Softy and Dick Show at 3 o'clock every day. You may have heard of it. Been around for a while. We had the idea that we wanted to put together a listener-led editorial board to dictate almost policy for the radio program. For example, and this will be kind of new to this audience, but Dick Fain, as you know, graduate from the University of Washington, was in the marching band at UW, big-time dog fan, loves the Huskies, but is bananas about Gonzaga basketball, which I don't understand that.
No.
I've never understood it. I don't get it. I don't know what that is all about. I think there's a screw loose. The guy's a French fry short of a Happy Meal. Something's going on there. He's a burrito short of a combo plate. And so, you know, should Dick Fain be allowed to, you know, root for Gonzaga when he clearly is also a Husky basketball fan? Things like that, that you'll decide, by the way. Is soccer a real sport?
Oh, come on
here
now.
Here come the texts, 49451. So whatever topics come up on the radio show, whatever conversations come up on the radio show, and we need to get a ruling from the audience. The audience will be this editorial board. 9 people made up of women and men will get to decide policy and the editorial for the program. We have an opinion that speaks for the show. You guys and gals out there will decide. So all you have to do is get to the website, sportsradiokjr.com. Check it out. Jackson's got like a little form out there. You can copy and paste and fill it out, send it back to him. And then in a couple weeks from now, we will start weeding out the candidates and come down to 9 people that we decide in the end we want to have represent the program. Lakeland Village Golf Course is going to give every member of the board a free golf membership for a year. The Ram is going to give you $100 and a free membership in the Mug Club, and our friends at SimplySeattle.com are going to give you 30% off anything you buy for a year as long as you're on the board. So it's a pretty cool thing.
It really is, and I think this board will be used, you know, on the fly, where we'll be just in the middle of a conversation, be talking about something random. Russell Wilson, right? You know, should the Seahawks, you know, let's say there's a report that comes out that says Atlanta's will or New Orleans willing to send 2 first-round picks and a player for Russell Wilson. We're right there. We go into our whole text thread, going to the board and saying, should the Seahawks take this offer?
Yes. Do we endorse the deal? And yes or no?
So right there, you need to, as a listener who's filling out this application and sending it, you need to be ready to be on the fly on our show
for sure.
and just chime in with your 2 cents and be part of this board.
Yeah. I mean, all you have to do is just have your cell phone on, right?
Yeah.
And be able to answer a text. That's it. So yeah, things like that. These the official position of the radio show that the Seahawks should do everything they can right now to trade Russell Wilson. That's what we think.
Welcome to my happy place.
So you're going to decide policy for the radio show. Are these weird clips that we get to hear from Russell Wilson getting a little creepy?
Look what the hell she's doing.
Yes or no? Okay. Editorial board says yes, we believe that they are now officially creepy. And by the way, speaking of that, I keep seeing all these things on Twitter, and my regular partner, Dick Fain, he's not here to roll his eyes. Like, Florio was on the show yesterday. I don't know if you even noticed this, Jackson, when Mike was on the air with us yesterday, but he brings up Russell Wilson's future and Dick just rolls his eyes.
Like, yeah.
Eventually his eyes are going to roll out of his head onto the table, fall onto the floor, and get kicked down the hall, because the amount of time that he has spent rolling his eyes about the Russell Wilson thing is crazy. And look, I mean, don't blame anybody but him for opening up that can of worms. Don't blame anybody but him or his agent for opening up those can of worms. It's a lot easier to control the behavior of one person versus the behavior of tens of thousands of people, meaning fans and people that cover the NFL for a living. So until he either A, re-signs with the Seahawks, or B, and you know what? I'm not even sure as I'm saying it if there is a B. I think it's all about A. Until he re-signs with the Hawks, until he puts pen to paper and re-signs in Seattle, I don't think that these conversations are going to go away.
No.
They might go away for us in Seattle temporarily, but look, and I agree with what Dick has said, and I agree with what Greg Bellows said, that I think Russell Wilson's here in 2022. I do not think he's playing for somebody else next year.
Me on Easter weekend, your wife is over here braiding your hair.
But I also think the biggest question out there is still regarding his long-term future.
Yeah.
Is he here in 2024 and beyond? Because 2 years ago, that wasn't a topic. 2 years ago, it was hard to even fathom Russell Wilson not being here. And now he's opened that door. So whether you think he's here next year or not, whether you're upset about people thinking he's here next year or not, guys, next year isn't even the story. The story has now become Russell Wilson's long-term future. Will he re-sign another extension? You know, we thought, you know, a couple years ago coming out of that loss to the Packers that he's going to be here until he's 40 years old. Maybe he'll go sign somewhere and play a couple years like Joe Montana or whatever, but he's going to be here for 6-7 more years. Now I think that is in doubt, and that to me is the story.
Yeah, and here's the problem, and this goes as a problem for all professional sports, because when you have an athlete, if they ever come out at any point with one team, if they ever come out and say, I'd be open to be trading to these teams, you know, via the agent, whatever, which Russell Wilson did at the start of last offseason, right? It only takes once. So regardless of how many times in the last year, calendar year, Russell Wilson has come out and said, I want to be in Seattle, I love the Seahawks. I mean, we saw, you know, on Radio Row, he was talking with SiriusXM and saying all those very nice things. None of that matters,
right?
Because it only takes one time for you to come out and say those things about which teams you'd be open to. It only takes one time for all of the bag of worms to be dropped on the floor, and now you can't put them back in.
You can't put the toothpaste back in the tube,
exactly.
As Mike Holmgren said. Hey, by the way, I want to mention tomorrow, too, on the show, Clint Hurt is going to join us, the new Seahawk DC, at 4 o'clock. And then from 3 to 4, John Costakos, you guys may remember that name, did all the posters you had on your wall when you were growing up as a kid. The Land of Boz, for example, is in the sports pit right now. So John's going to hang out with us for an hour tomorrow, and he's got some freaking stories, dude. Big. I don't even know how many he's willing to tell on the air. They're so crazy. But at 3:30 tomorrow, Jim McMahon is going to join us. The former Bears quarterback is going to hop on the air. Some young guy may say, isn't that the guy from the program? He will join us tomorrow at 3 o'clock. John will, and then Jim McMahon at 3:30. Clint Hurt at 4 o'clock. And then Hugh Millen will come on at 5 p.m. Kevin Harlan was not able to do the show yesterday because he was on his way to the All-Star game for TNT, so he will join us at 6 p.m. tomorrow. But today, William Inge, the brand new defensive coordinator at UW, will join us at 3. Dave Tomlinson, calling the game tonight with Ian Furness on radio for the Kraken in Winnipeg. He'll join us next from Winnipeg right here on 950 KJR.